Hey, good evening, everybody. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Stick around. We have all sorts of fun and frivolity for you tonight. Probably some screaming and cursing and gnashing of teeth. But let's do it together. There's no point in, your suffering and my suffering all by ourselves, you know, suffering the tortures of the damned because we are so angry at what's happening to our country. There is relief. It is coming one way or another. It really, really is. So let's all be in the proper frame of mind tonight. Huh? Can we do that? Even Barack Obama is making jokes about Lumpy Boy, and somebody said about Palin, instead of Caribou Barbie, it's all over the internet, I guess, how about Mussolini? A couple of announcements first. I want to stress the importance right now of the importance of people joining the Nova M Radio Founders Club. All right. I don't want to start the program sounding like you're listening to Fundraising Day on NPR. But again, the idea of becoming a founding member of Nova M, Founders Club member of Nova M. I realize the network's been in business for 2 years. It doesn't matter. We are a fledgling network. We are new. We are attempting to build something here that will be lasting. So we're looking for your help. You get stuff in return. First of all, it costs $100 a year or $10 a month, your choice. Just go to novamradio.com, and the information will be there on how to become a founding member. There are downloads, podcasts, special videos that are accessible only to Founding Club members. So, if you can't afford it right now, that's understandable. I realize money can be tight, but what we're talking about is if you can afford it, $10 a month or $100 a year to become a founding member of Nova M Radio. So do consider it, okay? We need you as much as you tell us you need us. So novamradio.com. Check it out. Also, I've been meaning to say this. I've said before, I go to all kinds of websites to get information during the day, and occasionally I even go to New York Times, yes, Washington Post, yes, but most of the stuff I get comes from the internet. Now, it may be NewYorkTimes.com, but it still comes from the internet. There is a source out there that provides you with just damn near everything you need. There are a lot of sources, but I'm going to plug this one tonight. It's TV News Lies, TVNewsLies.org. When you go to that website, there is a listing of the day's top stories that would pertain to your interest, my interest, as a liberal, as a progressive, as a vociferous critic of these Nazis that are trying to take over the country and getting real close to doing it. So this is a shameless plug for the website, TVNewsLies.org. I plug a lot of websites on this program. I plug superbeans.com. And, Bob advertised on the program, for a while. But anytime I plug, it's just, you know, it's free. It doesn't cost the advertiser anything or the person I'm plugging anything. TVNewsLies.org does not advertise with us. And that's not what this is about. This is about you having a source to really get some good stuff. Now, there are a number of sources. I'm not being, exclusive here. I want to be inclusive. TVNewsLies.org. Go there. That should be one of the spots that you stop at in the morning when you're deciding, okay, what is it today that's going to drive me insane? You know, what can I see today that will utterly and absolutely freak me out? Well, start there. TVNewsLies.org. Also, I have something from Bob Alexander, A Moment with Bob coming up. We'll talk about it at the top of next hour, that this is a wonderful idea, and I want you to pay close attention to it coming up next hour. All right? He's got an idea on how to affect what Vince Bugliosi wrote about in the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder. He sent me an email today and explained it, and This may be it. So we'll talk about it coming up top of next hour. Right now, Barack Obama. This is from today. Okay, this is today. Obama's out on the campaign trail, and while the economy is literally collapsing, this is nothing that is a shock to any of us. What we're all trying to do right now, I would assume, is go with the flow. A lot of people do not have portfolios, individually managed portfolios, but a lot of folks have retirement funds and 401ks and so on and so forth, and they're being beat to death because of the greed bastards who have done this to us. And nobody will be taken out and shot. Nobody will be hanged for these crimes against us. Nobody will be go to prison for stealing us blind and destroying the capitalist economy that should have been destroyed a long time ago in this country, but it's been ricocheting along, and most of us have been holding on by our fingernails, but the greed bastards continue to rip and rape and pillage and take what they want and then walk away and leave a mess for us once again to clean up. All right, that's what's been going on. McCain doesn't have a clue. I don't know about Barack Obama. I'm hoping that Barack Obama has advisors who understand this situation we're in and who will do something about it. I realize that a lot of his advisors are from the neoliberal school, the University of Chicago, which is not a good thing in my estimation, but that's just my opinion. I'm hoping that Barack Obama will realize the monetary bomb, the financial bomb that's ticking on the desk in the Oval Office waiting for the next occupant of the White House. It's going to be nasty. But one thing we do know is McCain doesn't have a clue. Let's listen to Barack Obama from today out on the campaign trail.
Now, this has been an interesting week for John McCain. It's been really interesting to watch him respond to this economic news. His first reaction to this crisis on Monday was to stand up and repeat the line that he said over and over and over again throughout this campaign. I quote, "The fundamentals of our economy are strong." Now, his campaign must have realized that probably this wasn't the smartest thing to say on the day of a financial meltdown. So they sent him back a few hours later to clean up his remarks. But it sounds like he got a little carried away, because yesterday John McCain actually said that if he's president, he'll take on, and I quote, "the old boys network in Washington." I'm not making this up. This is somebody who's been in Congress for 26 years, who put 7 of the most powerful Washington lobbyists in charge of his campaign. And now he tells us that he's the one who's going to take on the old boys network. The old boys network. In the McCain campaign, that's called a staff meeting.
I love that. That's the best line of the campaign from anybody so far, except what Biden said during the debates about Giuliani, noun, verb, 9/11. But that's good. That's right. In the McCain campaign, the old boys network, that's called a staff meeting. I like that. Yeah, I'm so sick. I'm sick to my guts listening to McCain talk about how I'm prepared. I'm going to meet him head on. I'm going to restore this. I'm going to regulate that. This son of a bitch has been one of the most vocal advocates. He and Phil Gramm and Dick Armey and the rest of these thugs, back in the day, the most vocal advocates of getting rid of all government regulation. Let the dumb bastards put their money wherever they can be conned into putting their money. The small operators, the big fund operators, the 401k people, let them put it anywhere, because we're going to rip them off. This has been John McCain. Now all of a sudden John McCain's talking about regulation. Oh, please, give me a break. Everything out of the mouths of these two. By these two, I mean Mussolini and Lumpy Boy. Everything out of their mouths is a lie.
Hey! Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. Bill from Ottawa writes, Mike, not content with poking the Russians in the eye of the sharp stick, the Bush administration continues to attempt to widen the wars. These people are either insane or evil, probably both. The new Pakistan prime minister has a very loose grip on power, with only about 26% of the population actually supporting him. Why is America trying to destabilize Pakistan? Where is the UN on this? And perhaps more important, where is Obama? And why is no one asking him if he supports this action? Oh, that's right. We already know he does. Don't bother asking John McCain either. He's taking a nap. Where does this crap end? I am starting work on my bomb shelter tomorrow. If Pakistan followed the Bush doctrine, they'd nuke America tomorrow. And according to the followers of Sarah Palin, that would be okay. Right, Charlie? What Bill's talking about is another report. A U.S. drone aircraft fires a missile into a village in northwest Pakistan. 5 people killed. According to the BBC, the incident came as the top U.S. military commander met Pakistan officials to discuss the tension over U.S. attacks on the Pakistan side of the border. At least 6 people were injured in the attack, according to BBC correspondent. The BBC says 4 missiles were fired at the village about a half a kilometer inside Pakistan. 2 reportedly hit a house occupied by, quote, militants, end quote. Observers say the attack may be an indication that the Americans have told Pakistan there will be no more ground assaults, but that drone attacks are going to continue as before. Oh, I see. Okay, well, that makes sense. This would be like a foreign invader based in Mexico saying, okay, no more cross-border raids into Texas to kill people, but we are going to shoot missiles at you from our drone aircraft flying where you can't see them because you're stupid mountain tribal people and you don't know anything. Oh, my God. The BBC's correspondent in Islamabad say tension between the two countries, that's us and them, remain high after the attacks. The Pakistani army, as you know, has said they will not tolerate any more of this from the United States. Not one more bit of it. We're not going to tolerate any more of it. No more. Oh, you're going to use drone aircraft. Oh, well then, okay. I guess that's all right. There's a new book out, Angler. This is the one by Barton Gellman, Washington Post investigative reporter. Angler is one of the names that, one of the code names given to the real madman that history will show in this administration, and that's Dick Cheney, the real murderer, the real killer. I can appreciate Bugliosi's book, indicting or trying, or prosecuting Bush for murder. But, of course, Cheney should be in the dock with him. But anyway, remember Dick Armey, Republican of Texas, former House Majority Leader during the Clinton years, a real right-wing bastard if ever one existed. Well, Armey is now saying, he says in this book, that he was wavering. He wasn't sure about giving Bush the authority to wage war in late 2002. He was still in office then. And he says that Cheney misled him by saying that Saddam Hussein had, first of all, direct personal ties to al-Qaeda terrorists, and that Saddam was making rapid progress toward a suitcase nuclear weapon. Cheney's lies, his assertions, described by former House Majority Leader Richard Armey, came in a highly classified one-on-one briefing in the Vice President's hideaway office in the Capitol. The threat Cheney described to Armey went far beyond the public statements that have been criticized for relying on so-called cherry-picked intelligence of unknown reliability. There was no intelligence here to support Cheney's private assertions, Barton Gellman writes in his book. And he adds, they, quote, crossed so far beyond the known universe of fact that they were simply without foundation, end quote. We're talking about the vice president now. Keep that in mind. In other words, Barton Gellman is reporting that Cheney was a lying son of a bitch. Now, Army had spoken out against the war, and his opposition gave cover to some Democrats in 2003 who feared the political costs of appearing to be weak. A typical Democrat. Oh, if we don't support slaughter of thousands of innocent people, we'll appear to be weak. Well, thank God Dick Armey says he doesn't like it. Now we can hide behind Dick Armey's corpulent body because we're Democrats and we're goddamn cowards. And we never do anything on our own because we're scared of our own shadows. However, Armey reversed his position after Cheney told him that the threat from Iraq was actually more imminent than we want to portray to the public at large, end quote. That's a quote out of Cheney's filth-encrusted mouth. I'll have some more of this when we come back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Back to this little piece here about what Barton Gellman wrote. The Washington Post investigative reporter has the new book out titled Angler, the Cheney Vice Presidency. I don't think the sense that Gellman provides in this book is something that most of us have been aware of. We've known that Dick Cheney's a goddamn criminal. He has been the real force of evil in this Bush crime family, which is not to take Bush off the hook. Bush is a religious freak, a dry drunk, a drug user. Call him what you want, an arrogant little twit. But Cheney knew how to manipulate that. And Cheney, for the past 8 years, has manipulated Bush into doing things that Bush would have been inclined to do anyway, but might have hesitated because he is a dry drunk, because he is a jackass. But Cheney was right there with his foot up George's ass to push him into all these terrible situations. Now, according to Barton Gellman in his book Angler, Dick Armey, the former House Majority Leader, had some private conversations with Cheney because Army was kind of wavering on whether or not to go to war in 2003, invade a country that had done nothing to us, did not have the capability of ever doing anything to us. In fact, is a country to which only we had done something. I mean, Iraq is, well, whatever. But Army was kind of hesitant. Even though he's an old fart, red-faced, hillbilly Republican from Texas, he still questioned whether or not it was a good idea. He was starting to waver, and all the cowardly-ass Democrats were able to hide behind Army's rather ample frame back in when this was going on in 2002, when Army was expressing these doubts, because the Republicans were cowards. The Republicans were stupid. The Republicans were afraid that if they didn't support slaughter, they would be seen by whom? As being weak. You're not weak, you craven bastards. You're useless. You're worse than useless. God, I hate Democrats. Those Democrats, anyway. So Army got taken down to what Barton Gellman describes as room H208. That is Cheney's hidey hole in the Capitol. And in the hidey hole, Cheney started telling Army, oh no, it's a lot worse than we've been letting on in public. Let me tell you, Saddam Hussein He rapes children. He cuts the throats of people. He's got suitcase nuclear weapons he's developing. It's horrifying. You've got to support the war. And by the way, there is some stuff here that I can't even tell you, Dick. If I told you, you'd have to immediately kill yourself. So I'm telling you, you got to support the war, which Army then did. According to Dick Armey, as quoted in Barton Gellman's new book, Cheney said that Iraq's ability to miniaturize weapons of mass destruction, particularly nuclear, had been substantially refined since the first Gulf War and would soon result in, quote, packages that could be moved even by ground personnel, end quote. Cheney went on to link the threat to Hussein's alleged tie, linked that threat, the threat of suitcase nukes. Remember that? Huh? Remember that? Think back. I vaguely remember suitcase nukes. Oh, son of a bitch. Really? Oh, yeah. That was me 5 years ago. All of it a lie. Now, Cheney linked the suitcase nuclear bomb threat to Saddam Hussein's ties to al-Qaeda, which also was a lie. You know, al-Qaeda is like the Southern Baptist Convention with weapons. They're religious, insane people. Saddam Hussein, for whatever he was a secular dictator. He didn't countenance any of this religious claptrap horse hockey. Al-Qaeda, if there was such a thing, the Islamic fundamentalists hated him. That's one of the reasons Iran, the mullahs in Iran, hated Saddam. That's another reason Saddam kept the front up, that he had weapons back before the weapons inspectors discovered that it was all talk, because he, Saddam, was terrified of the religious right. Only in this case, it was the Islamic religious right. All religious right-wing organizations, especially the Christians and the Islamists, are insane. Murderously so. So anyway, Cheney is sitting there with the obviously gullible Dick Cheney pouring bourbon and branch water down the bulbous-nosed freak and telling him that not only did Saddam have suitcase nukes, but the ties to al-Qaeda were nothing short of history-altering. And then, according to Dick Armey in this book, Cheney went on to explain,
we now know they have the ability to develop these weapons in a very portable fashion, and they have the delivery system and their relationship with these organizations such as al-Qaeda.
Armey is quoted in the book as saying, did Dick Cheney purposely tell me things he knew to be untrue? I seriously feel that way. That may be the case. May be the case. Are you still just an alcoholic sot, you freak, Army? Are you really? May be the case? He went on to say, had I known or believed then what I believe now, I would have publicly opposed the war resolution right to the bitter end, and I believe I might have stopped it from happening, end quote. So there you have it. One man. Now, call it hubris, call it egomaniacal attitude about oneself. But Dick Armey says, I might have stopped the war. Now, take it back one step. If Dick Armey could have stopped the war by organizing a resistance to the resolution that was passed by all sorts of cowardly, stinking Democrats and warmongering, bloodlust Republicans, Armey is suggesting he could have stopped it, except for one other person, Dick Cheney. Had Armey not been convinced down in room H208 that, had he not been convinced that nukes, suitcase nukes, and al-Qaeda ties, and poison rats, and demons dancing on the head of a pin, had he not been convinced of all that by Dick Cheney, the war might never have occurred? Is that the bottom line here? Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Is there any doubt about the evil core of Dick Cheney? I mean, I can't. I sometimes try to think of descriptive terms, gutter descriptive terms, to fulfill the rage and the hatred and the disgust I feel for Dick Cheney, and I can't come up with any. I can't. This guy is, to me, this guy is out there with Hitler. He's out there with Pol Pot. He's out there with every mass murderer. And the hell of it is, whereas, arguably, Hitler, Pol Pot, Stalin, these mass killers, Mao, did it for political reasons. Cheney did it for greed. Goddamn greed! And that's what makes him unique. Greed. Nothing but greed. It's incredible. And for Cheney to be sitting there pouring his filth into this poor, stupid George Bush's ears. And George Bush being the absolutely rust-brained freak that he is and was, taking it all in. Now, there's more here. According to Bob Woodward's book, The War Within, A Secret White House History, 2006 to 2008, Robert Dreyfus, writing at the current issue of The Nation, in the noted section, says, reading this book is like reading raw transcripts of documents and interviews from a sensational murder trial. You know what happens, and you know who the victim and the perpetrator are, but to read their actual words is chilling. It's the in cold blood of national security journalism. You're familiar with in cold blood, right? All right. It's the in cold blood of national security journalism. Now, we've talked about what Bob Woodward said in the book, that we spied on Nouri al-Maliki, the Iraqi prime minister toy that we installed there. But the core of Woodward's book is an account of how Bush, Cheney, and a rogue general named Jack Keane and John McCain all coordinated with Stephen Hadley to wage war in Iraq. When we come back, I'm going to give you some more of this. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It's about 10 before the hour. So back to Robert Dreyfus' little mini column in the current issue, the print issue of The Nation, about Bob Woodward's book, The War Within, A Secret White House History, 2006 to 2008. As Dreyfus writes, the core of Woodward's book here is an account of how George Bush, Dick Cheney, John McCain, a rogue general named Jack Keane, and a team of strategists at the American Enterprise Institute, all coordinated by the sycophantic Bush-worshipping National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley, how this gang rode roughshod over the entire Washington establishment to prolong the war in Iraq by launching the surge in January 2007. Now, As Dreyfus writes, consider this. Had they not done so, today, 2 years later, the war would largely be over. These are the ones, Bush, Cheney, McCain, Keane, Hadley, who went against everybody. In the book, Woodward makes clear the overwhelming consensus among the public and in Washington was for ending the war and starting the drawdown of U.S. forces. General George Casey, the U.S. commander in Iraq, believed that. General John Abizaid, the CENTCOM commander, believed that. Nearly all of the ranking uniformed military believed that. It was the view of the Baker-Hamilton Iraq Study Group. They believed it. The State Department believed it. Members of Congress on both sides of the aisle believed it. In his book, Bob Woodward details how all of them were steamrollered by Cheney and McCain and Bush and Hadley and a bunch of neocon Likudniks from the American Enterprise Institute. Now, this is weird. Listen, the picture of Bush that emerges is not a very flattering one in this book. He's portrayed as a man convinced of his utter righteousness. He says, quote, "Not one doubt. We're killing them. We're killing them all." End quote. Yet at the same time, Bush, according to Bob Woodward, is blissfully detached, relying on Stephen Hadley for everything. His decision to order the surge, made late in 2006, was a tough one, Bush told Woodward. Why? Here's why. Quote, "Now, this period of time where I've got, I don't know, how many holiday receptions to attend." End quote. So that's why the decision to order the surge was a tough one. Because this filthy killer's schedule was just chock-a-block with holiday receptions. Now, knowing this, and I have to assume that 95%, 98% of the American public doesn't have a clue about this, because let me ask you something. Let's assume you're very patriotic, and your grandfather served in World War II, and your father served in Vietnam, or at least in the military, in the Vietnam era. You've got two or three cousins who have been in the military. You've got a couple of aunts who are in the military. And so now here you are. You're 40 years old, and you got an 18-year-old son or daughter. Let's say son, for the sake of my latent sexism. You've got an 18-year-old son, and he wants to join the military. What are you going to tell him? Are you going to tell him to go ahead knowing this stuff, that not only was there no reason for the war, the military commanders were against it, the military no longer makes decisions about military tactics. I'm not saying deciding foreign policy, that is up to civilians, but it's up to the military to decide on military tactics and strategies. What do you tell your relatives or your neighbor's kid or your nephew or your nieces who say, "Well, you know, I want to join the military"? Do you give your blessing knowing that your son, your daughter, your niece, your nephew is possibly going to die because of the greed and the arrogance of filthy, disgusting pigs like these? I hope you wouldn't do that. I hope you would say to your son what my former brother-in-law said to my son 10 years ago, when my son felt like joining the Navy. And my former brother-in-law, I say former because his wife, my sister, passed away. My former brother-in-law said to my son, and keep in mind, my former brother-in-law was a naval officer. 2 tours in Vietnam, and 4 years of shore duty in Europe. And my brother-in-law said to my son, Chris, "You're out of your mind. Stay as far away from the military as you possibly can. especially now. And when was now? Now was actually when Chris was about 21 or 22. So it was right at the turn there where it was clear the direction the U.S. foreign policy was going. It's just, it is such an outrage. Now, when we come back after this break, I'll tell you Bob Alexander's idea. And I want you to pay very close attention when we come back, because this is a good one. And there's a website. I'm going to give you the address of the website, and you can go check it out yourself. All right? All right, stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Most people who are regular listeners to this program, you know who Bob is. We do a segment here called A Moment with Bob every once in a while. And he's been working on a project lately, and I want to include you in on this if you want to get in on it. I think it's a great idea. I know damn well that I'm going to get involved in this, too. But he sent me an email today, and he just mentioned, as he wrote in July, he was impressed with Vince Bugliosi's book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. And he wrote me back then about how he changed the main page at superbeans.com, which is his business. He changed it to read, quote, "In lieu of buying coffee this month, please consider picking up a copy of Vince Bugliosi's new book instead," end quote. Now, that takes a lot of, pardon the expression, balls to do that. When you have an internet business and you change your main page to where it doesn't say buy coffee, it says, don't buy coffee, but take the 20 bucks or whatever it is and get this book. Now, in addition to doing that, Bob bought a bunch of the copies himself and gave them away to family, friends, just whoever. And then last Tuesday, a little over a week ago, he went to a meet and greet the author event I think it was in Seattle. And he met Mr. Bugliosi, and he writes, "I met Mr. Bugliosi, who told me to call him Vince. Someday I'll be comfortable with that, but not yet. He's Vincent T. Bugliosi, vampire slayer, for God's sake." Well, he said the next day he was speaking at a book signing, and Bob's wife went to hear him. Arminda, she came back as crazy as I am. "We're committed," once again, not the best word, "but we're committed more than ever to get the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder in front of as many eyeballs as we can. But since July," Bob writes, "I've been getting some pretty strange feedback from a couple of people that read the book. You see, most people, including everybody I know, don't know squat about the law. And why should they? They're not lawyers. Most people's understanding of the law comes from decades of TV shows all the way back to black and white Perry Masons. And if they're literate, they might have read a Grisham novel or two. I've tolerated, Bob writes, a bunch of valueless arguments about why this won't work from people who don't know anything about how things work under the law. You know, getting George W. Bush prosecuted for murder. What a waste of time. Regardless of how much education someone has, Bob writes, if they're talking about something they know nothing about, they're lying. Along with arguing with right-wing crazy stupid people, listening to a bunch of BS from knowledgeable people makes me want to practice home dentistry on myself and rip my teeth out. What he's referring to is, you know, when he talks about, look, there's a killer in the White House who could be prosecuted for murder if somebody, some district attorney, would just make the first step. And because nobody will, our good friend Bob Alexander is ready to start removing his own teeth. And then he writes, which all of that indirectly explains why I'm self-employed. You see, the brilliance of Bugliosi's book is that he clearly lays out how any DA could prosecute Bush for murder if a soldier from his county had died in Iraq. It is so frustrating, Bob writes, when people don't see the words right in front of them. So my original plan of getting people to read the book and then pass it along to the local DA kind of stalled out. Then the day after the Bugliosi event, I was walking up to school to pick up my son and had an idea. I knew it was a good idea immediately. It was a good idea because I could afford to pull it off. Many times I've had a good idea for a movie, for example, but the next step is raising millions of dollars to see if I'm right or not, and I don't have the stomach lining for that anymore. Bob used to do that. But in this case, I had the cash to get the idea off the ground. Since filtering the book through regular people to get it to a DA wasn't working, how about eliminating the third party and get this book, written by America's preeminent prosecuting attorney, directly into the hands of a practicing prosecutor? Another lawyer would completely grasp what Bugliosi was writing about. And then, maybe, do something. So after a half day on the phone with the Washington Secretary of State, the Department of Revenue, and the IRS, I bought 3 domain names. Then I set up hosting for the domains, bought and configured a shopping cart, and started building the website. The name of the website, prosecutegeorgebush.com. And I finished it yesterday. prosecutegeorgebush.com. I was so caught up in it, Bob writes, I wasn't paying any attention when Wall Street blew its wheels the other day and began eating its young. Anyway, what's the point of prosecutegeorgebush.com? Well, maybe this is the point, Bob. He writes, there are 2,700 district attorneys in the United States. We intend to send a copy of the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder to every single one of them. That means we have to raise a little over 40 grand. All of the cash goes into buying the books from the publisher at 60% off, the padded envelopes, the mailing labels, the credit card processing fees and shipping costs, and every single DA in the country will have the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder in their face. So what do you think, Malloy? It's the only idea I can think of that might answer a question we've all had. Is this son of a bitch going to walk away scot-free after murdering hundreds of thousands of people? To begin to answer that question will cost about $15 per DA. Now, a rational person might ask, why bother? Well, regardless of what happens, we'll know a whole lot more about our country, the people who live in it, the people who control it, after the dust settles. It's like when I wrote to you regarding the 9/11 project. The benefit that comes from this project will be in the knowing. If we can't find 2,700 people across the country to kick in $15 to buy a book, to jumpstart the justice system, well, then that's a good thing to know. And if we can get one prosecutor to decide to go forward on this case, that's a good thing to know. And if during the grand jury process the Bush team of legal bots run this up to the Supreme Court and the case gets quashed, And it will be, because the court proved in 2000 that it can pick any old law they want to rule, to any old law they want to, out of the ether, to benefit George W. Bush. And there are a couple of new fresh faces ready to stomp on the rule of law. That'll be good to know, too. Because it will mean that we're all blankety, 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 blanked. And that will be real good to know also. But even if it gets all the way to the Supreme Court and then dies, what a story. I just finished the website yesterday. And somehow, through search engine mumble jumbo, a few people stumbled onto it. And one guy emailed me from the contact page. He called me a blanktard. Never heard that one before. Here's the favor part. He asked me for a favor when he sent the email. Any input you guys might have about prosecutegeorgebush.com would be appreciated. And if you think it's a good idea, could you mention it on the show? Regards, Bob. Well, not only do I think it's a good idea, I think it's one of the ballsiest things I've heard of in a long time. You and I both know, Truth Seeker, that no, the Democrats aren't going to do anything. They really aren't. And we also know this for a fact. When Obama is elected president, if he is, he's not going to do anything regarding the criminality of the Bush crime family either. Now, that may be, in a sense of history, a good thing, a bad thing, an indifferent thing. I'm to the point where I don't care anymore. I don't want to rely on, even in my head, on thinking that there's justice going to be served. I'm at an age in my life where, you know, every day that I wake up, I think, woo, made it again. I don't know how much time I have left. Of course, anyone can say that. I mean, when you're 22, you can say that. But, of course, you don't. But when you get into your 60s, then it becomes, oh, wow, look, the sun came up again. I'll be damned. I don't know if I'm going to live long enough to see justice done, and neither do you. But don't you want to make an effort? I mean, are you tired? I am of feeling absolutely, totally hamstrung about this, aren't you? I mean, Jesus, God! Aren't you sick of it? We have a killer in the White House. We have two of them, and they're surrounded by killers. And the bastards are going to walk unless one county prosecutor in this country out of 2,700 of them will do something.
Defining war on our terms.
It's about 23 past the hour. Now, before the program's over tonight, I'm going to do my part with at this website, prosecutegeorgebush.com. Don't put a W in it. You'll never get there. Prosecutegeorgebush.com. I like this idea, and I think it's different enough that maybe, I don't know. This is a kind of story or idea that really does deserve some national attention. It really does. It should be on Oberman's program. It should be on Chris Matthews' show. Somebody should pick this story up and say, you know, there's a guy out on the West Coast, out in Seattle, who is raising money to send books to every single prosecutor in the United States, county prosecutor, to try to get George Bush indicted and prosecuted for murder. So if you want to do Uncle Mike a favor, and this is the second one I'm asking for you from you tonight, go to prosecutegeorgebush.com and take a look. And let your conscience or your spirit guide you. Like Bob says in his email, what happens at this website is stuff that is good to know. Are there prosecutors who are willing to do this? That would be a good thing to know. Are there enough Americans who are willing to do this to get the books out to the prosecutors? That would be a good thing to know. How many hate-filled, garbagey emails are going to go to Bob? That'll be a good thing to know. You know there's going to be a ton of them. We get them here all the time. We even have a comedic section of the website, Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag, where we make fun of these stupid asses. But there are all sorts of good things to know with this little experiment. So hope you participate. Email from Prairie 2 here. Hey, Mike, the Fed seized AIG, the world's largest insurance company, for one simple reason. The company guarantees hundreds of billions of financial instruments held by China. The Fed seized Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae because they're about to default on hundreds of billions in bonds they sold to China. The Fed's $900 billion reserve account is empty, and they haven't begun to pay on these obligations, so the U.S. Treasury has written them a blank check. To cover this, they're holding special T-bill auctions starting today. If they can sell them, they're only good for 35 days. Talk about financing short and investing long. Word is that the stock market tanked today, again, as investors left to buy bonds. I wonder where they found the bonds. The Fed supposedly rescued AIG to keep it from tanking the stock market, but they are driving down the market to get the money to cover obligations to China. China is disinclined to buy more bonds since they see them as largely worthless, choosing instead to keep cash on hand to cover commodity purchases as hyperinflation of the dollar kicks in worldwide. In the meantime, most of the big banks are lining up to get money from the Fed, and if they don't get it, they will go under. The next one in the chute is Washington Mutual, the largest SNL, and only half of its obligations are covered by the FDIC. Even Citicorp is on the list of likely failures. If Treasury is dependent on issuing 35-day notes to get the money for continued bailouts at some point, they won't be able to refinance. And as people take money out of the stock market to buy bonds, the market will keep going down, driving more people out and into the bonds. But with each cycle, the amount they can take out goes down, and at some point, nobody will buy the stocks. The only course for the Treasury and the Fed at that point is just print money. More from Prairie 2 when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. To be.
They say don't step off the sidewalk and don't cross over the line. But we'll serve time at night when the lights begin to dim and smoke.
Faster than a flying monkey, More powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It is 26 past the hour. I want to finish this email I got from Prairie 2, where he is explaining to people who need it explained to them, like I do, about why the feds seized American International Group. Is that it? The world's largest insurance company. And as Prairie 2 says, for one simple reason, they guarantee hundreds of billions of financial instruments held by China. And then Prairie 2 goes on to explain that Treasury is issuing 35-day notes, T-bill auctions, 35 days. Talk about financing short and investing long, he writes. Now, let me just backtrack. If Treasury is dependent on issuing 35-day notes to get the money for continued bailouts, at some point they won't be able to refinance. Because as people take money out of the stock market to buy bonds, as they may have been doing today, the market will keep going down, driving more people out and into bonds. But with each cycle, the amount they can take out goes down, and at some point nobody will buy the stocks, and then the market will plummet. The only course for the Treasury and the Fed at that point is to just print money. The dollar had been gaining ground on the euro since the war in Georgia broke out, but the dollar is in the tank today. Gold had been in a slump as people needed to sell to make margin calls, but now gold is skyrocketing. If they play the numbers right, they might be able to keep this one-pony circus going until November 4th. I'm betting on canned goods futures. P.S. And the P.S. is because I mentioned last night about looking at generators when we were at Home Depot, the second worst store on earth. P.S. If you can afford it, get a generator that is dual fuel, natural gas and diesel. Or set up a turnstile in the backyard like the one in Conan the Barbarian. You just need to raid the neighboring village for little kids to run it. Tell Molly it's a new kind of jungle gym. She would never go for it. Trust me. Now, a couple more things here, and then we're going to come to your phone calls. There's one thing I got to do tonight about white privilege. Have you seen this? Oh, my God. The matter of fact, let's do that right now. This is from Tim Wise. And it's for people who can't grasp the concept of white privilege. You know, and that's mostly white people. You know, we can never understand, really, because we don't have any reference point. We've always been white. Our parents were white. Well, okay, maybe at least one of the two of them. But we have always had our whiteness, our Caucasianness. So we can't grasp the concept of white privilege. It's just there. It always has been there. Well, Tim Wise tries to explain it. Here's a couple examples. White privilege is when you can get pregnant at 17, like Bristol Palin, and everyone is quick to insist that your life and that of your family is a personal matter, and that no one has the right to judge you or your parents because every family has challenges, even as black and Latino families with similar challenges are regularly typified as irresponsible, pathological, and arbiters of social decay. White privilege is when you can call yourself an effing redneck, like Bristol Palin's boyfriend does, and talk about how if anyone messes with you, you'll kick their effing ass, and talk about how you like to shoot blank for fun and still be viewed as a responsible all-American boy and a great son-in-law to be, rather than a thug. White privilege is when you can attend four different colleges in 6 years, like Sarah Palin did, one of which you basically failed out of, then returned to after making up some coursework at a community college, and no one questioned your intelligence or commitment to achievement, whereas a person of color who did this would be viewed as unfit for college and probably someone who only got in the first place because of affirmative action. White privilege is when you can claim that being mayor of a town smaller than most medium-sized colleges and then governor of a state with about the same number of people as the lower fifth of the island of Manhattan, when all that makes you ready to potentially be president and people don't pee on themselves with laughter. While being a black U.S. senator, two-term state senator, and constitutional law scholar means you're untested. White privilege is being able to say that you support the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance because, quote, if it's good enough for the Founding Fathers, it's good enough for me, end quote, and not be immediately disqualified from holding office since, after all, the pledge was written in the 1800s and the under God part wasn't added until the 1950s. While believing that reading accused criminals and terrorists their rights because, you know, the Constitution, which you used to teach at a prestigious law school, requires it, doing that is a dangerous and silly idea only supported by mushy liberals. White privilege is being able to be a gun enthusiast and not make people immediately scared of you. White privilege is being able to have a husband who is a member of an extremist political party that wants your state to secede from the Union and whose motto was Alaska first, and no one questions your patriotism or that of your family, while if you're black and your spouse merely fails to come to a 9/11 memorial so she can be home with her kids on the first day of school, people immediately think she's being disrespectful. White privilege is being able to make fun of community organizers and the work they do, like, among other things, fight for the right of women to vote or for civil rights or the 8-hour workday or an end to child labor. And people think you're really being pithy and tough, but if you merely question the experience of a small-town mayor and 18-month governor with no foreign policy expertise beyond a class you took in college, somehow you're being mean or even sexist. White privilege is being able to convince white women who don't even agree with you on any substantive issue to vote for you and your running mate because all of a sudden your presence on the ticket has inspired confidence in these same white women and made them give your party a second look. White privilege is being able to fire people who didn't support your political campaigns and not be accused of abusing your power or being a typical politician who engages in favoritism while being black and merely knowing some folks from the old line political machines in Chicago means you must be corrupt. White privilege is being able to attend churches over the years whose pastors say the people who voted for John Kerry or merely criticized George W. Bush are going to hell, and that the U.S. is an explicitly Christian nation, and the job of Christians is to bring Christian theological principles into government, and who bring in speakers who say the conflict in the Middle East is God's punishment on Jews for rejecting Jesus, and everyone can still think you're just a good church-going Christian. But if you're black and friends with a black pastor who has noted that terrorist attacks are often the result of U.S. foreign policy and who talks about the history of racism and its effect on black people, you're an extremist who probably hates America. White privilege is not knowing what the Bush Doctrine is when asked by a reporter, and then people get angry at the reporter for asking you such a trick question, while being black and merely refusing to give one-word answers to the queries of Bill O'Reilly means you're dodging the question or trying to seem overly intellectual and nuanced. White privilege is being able to claim your experience as a POW has anything at all to do with your fitness for president, while being black and experiencing racism is, as Sarah Palin has referred to it, a light burden. And finally, white privilege is the only thing that could possibly allow someone to become president when he has voted with George W. Bush 90% of the time. Even as unemployment is skyrocketing, people are losing their homes, inflation is rising, and the U.S. is increasingly isolated from world opinion, just because white voters aren't sure about that whole change thing. You know, it's just too vague and ill-defined, unlike, say, 4 more years of the same, which is very concrete and very certain. White privilege is, in short, the problem. Tim Wise is the author of White Like Me. He's also the author of Speaking Treason Fluently, both of which are published by Soft Skull Press. And you can get this information. Go to Soft Skull, just like it sounds, .com. Tim Wise, that is well done. Well done. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, we're going to start the agony of your phone calls. Are you ready for some phone calls? Stick around. Oh, all the lines are open. Okay. Does anyone want to talk tonight? 800-989-1480. That's the number, 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
The beauty of grace, the beauty of grace, the beauty of
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Let's go to the phones right now, starting with John in Culver, California, listening on KTLK. Is that Culver or Culver City?
Culver City, Mike.
Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, man. I listen to you every day. You're awesome. the thing I want to say is, I'm 55 years old, and I've been around here in the same area for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And it just so happens, I'm starting to notice that everybody's losing their common sense. I mean, there's so many different ways of expressing a point, and when you watch, like, Hannity and the guys, they will stop short of finishing a sentence that would make it an incorrect statement.
Right.
Okay? And so everybody that walks lockstep with them, they don't have any common sense because they don't follow through and find out, like John Kerry, I voted for this before I voted against it. And the dot, dot, dot was because I read the fine print.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And so it's like, everybody just runs off sound bites, Mike, and I don't know. All my friends understand the points that you make, and they don't even listen to your station. So it is getting out there. I think common sense is starting to spread amongst the public, but
I hope it's common sense and not a sense of almost futile rage that is finally getting people's attention. The problem here, and I honestly believe this, John, that the problem is most of us get most of our information daily from at least what passes for news from television. And
right.
Television is a medium of time, not space. They have so much time available to them. There's 22 minutes in the nightly newscasts.
Right.
Now I realize that during the day on MSNBC and CNN, they have a seemingly endless hours. But most people are working. Most people who have jobs are working, or they're looking for work, and they're not seeing that. So, you know, the evening news comes along. They got 22 minutes. A long story on the evening news is one that runs 2 minutes, 30 seconds. A person can't describe to me how to make deviled eggs in 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's the problem. The information has to be gotten independently. We have to go to the internet. We have to go to the print medium, and we have to read. And if we're not willing to do that, we're very much screwed.
Well, Mike, please don't overdo your blood pressure, man. People do get it. There are millions of us who do understand what's going on. And not, like I said, not everybody even has a chance to listen to your show, and they still have the same point of view.
Yeah, so. well, that's I think I'm really aware of that. I don't have any exclusive franchise on trying to get the word out. People don't, nobody needs to listen to this program to get the truth out. And I recognize that. I've said before, maybe you never heard me say this, but the function of this program. This is like, that's why we do it at night. I've had many offers to do a daytime program. I don't want to. I do it at night because it's a chance to sit around this electronic fireplace. You got to imagine it in your mind. And we just talk about what has happened during the day. I've also said there are no solutions here. I don't have any solutions. I very seldom have good ideas. This is, I don't know, like if you went to college, it's like a college bitch session where you just sit around and vent. And I think that serves a function. Not every radio program is going to be one, or shouldn't be one, that says, well, listen to my program and I've got all the answers. I don't have any answers. All I have are questions. So that's kind of what we're about. Thanks, John. Appreciate you checking in, pal. We got a break here? Not yet? Oh, no, I guess not yet. David is calling from Fort Lauderdale, listening on WINZ. Hey, David.
Hey, Mike. Oh, man, it's such a pleasure, man. I just want to let you know that the African-American community is sending out enough love to you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Well, that's nice. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Get those people on the phone. Don't let them, get them off the phone if they're not speaking anything that is fundamentally making sense. And I agree with you. You know, they claim to be Christians, and then on the other hand, they don't follow the very Jesus Christ that they believe in. If Jesus Christ was here now, he'd be turning over a few tables. He got angry. So, you know, they act as though anger is something that's not Christian. You know, you have a right to be angry, I think, when things are not right, especially when it's a country that you love.
Right.
And I just wanted, as far as like the racial undertones in the elections, we've got to see that America is a new dawn. I have African American kids, and we have Latino kids coming over to our house, white kids, all kind of kids, and we're just going to keep doing what we're doing, and just by people like you and Randy Rose, you're basically the only two people I can listen to on the radio station. I love listening to most of the liberals, but they basically they're wimps, and you and Randy are the only two that really stand up. You know, and that's the only two I can really tolerate on the radio.
Well,
right now.
I'd certainly agree with you, David, that Randy and I have styles that are different on the radio from other talk show hosts, which doesn't minimize their message either. It's just that, like I've said before, and I just said a minute ago, I wish I had solutions. Man, I would love to have a program where I could come on the air every day and say, okay, here was the problem today, here's the solution. But, you know, I'm not that smart. And I don't know if anybody's that smart anymore. So,
but your role is very important, because what you're doing, you're creating critical thought in an era where they're trying to diminish that. They don't want any thinkers in this world anymore.
Well,
so at least you're doing that, and that's what's important. And these kids, they get it. My 11-year-old son, he's black, and he as he gets home from school, he's boop onto Randy Rhodes.
Yeah. You know? The only hope we have, David, is that people. You said it, and I take it as a compliment, that this program and Randy's program inspires some critical thought. If we can do that, that is the best thing we could do. David, I got to leave it there, pal. Thank you. Appreciate you checking in. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon you now. Realize.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. How does it feel? I have to ask you, because I have a feeling that none of us, I know it hasn't hit me yet, and maybe it hasn't hit you. How does it feel to be on the hook in just the past few days for how much? $300 billion. And probably more than that. Say $100 billion each for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that you and I now own. $85 billion for AIG. What's that? $285 billion. How much more? Well, what are we on the hook for? What happened to Lehman Brothers? Lehman Brothers went down. Bear Stearns. How much was Bear Stearns? How does it feel? I don't know. I'm numb. I have no goddamn idea how this feels. All I know is this. There is a clique of capitalist predators in Washington who are making these massive decisions that are putting this country in hock because a bunch of goddamn money speculators are about to go down the toilet. Now, every single time anyone in this country starts talking rationally about single-payer health care, What is the usual rejoinder from the right wing? Huh? Come on. And from the Democrats. Come on, what is it? Oh, well, we can't afford that. Son of a bitch, you're talking about billions of dollars. And TV ads are put together to deep six the idea. And this one trots out, and that one trots out. And the pharmaceutical industry sends their howitzers out to start shooting down crippled and sick people. But let it be something like these filthy, piggish, greedy, criminal outfits like Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers and AIG. And what happens? Did this blow right by me? Was there a discussion in this country about whether or not to spend $500 billion on these predatory sons of bitches? So that the ultra-wealthy will continue to be ultra-wealthy. When was that discussion held? Did they do that on Face the Nation or Meet the Press or the CBS Evening News? Somebody tell me. When was this discussion held? Well, you know it wasn't held. The Nation editorial referencing this says this deal stinks. Just $100 billion for each of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It stinks because it doesn't solve anything. Fannie and Freddie executives got sacked, but nothing substantial was changed in the weirdly illegitimate structure of these private, profit-making corporations sponsored by the federal government. Wait a second. Oh, no. Really? Like single-payer health care would be sponsored by the federal government, but we can't go there because, well, goddamn, it'll cost money. Do you want the government deciding whether or not you get an appendectomy? A damn sight quicker than I like the government deciding to spend $500 billion of my money to shore up a bunch of failed predatory capitalist sump machines. Yes. Instead of acting decisively, Treasury Department basically opened up the public's wallet and promised to keep spending whatever it takes to save these filthy, predatory, capitalist bastards, with the exception of Lehman. I don't know what happened to Lehman. Somebody must have pissed someone off at Lehman. And what's the term they're using? Conservatorship. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are going into conservatorship. What the hell is that? Is that like enemy combatant? Is that like enhanced interrogation? Conservatorship. It's a fiction. Newsflash for you, Truth Seeker. You and I own, along with the rest of the country, we own Freddie Mae and or Fannie Mae, whatever the hell it is, and Freddie Mac now, because we're picking up the tab. Son of a bitch! If I'm asked to pay half $1 trillion for failed corporations, and yet I didn't get any of the money. I didn't get anything over the last 8 years when this garbage was going on. Did you? Anybody out there? Did you get a check? No? Well, then why are we picking up the tab? You want a solution to this? It's not very complicated. Wipe Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac off the face of the earth. Destroy them. Blow them up. Nationalize them. Buy out the shareholders for pennies on the dollar. And maybe restore one of them to the original status as a federal housing agency. As the nation says, the functions of these involve public services, supporting the flow of mortgage financing, encouraging broader home ownership, subsidizing construction of low-income housing. These public goods, this is a good thing, do not much interest private financiers unless they can harvest rip-and-run profits, which is exactly what they did. And in the process, put you and me on the hook for half $1 trillion and counting. They need to fail. Well, why should they stay in business? What the hell? Why should they stay in business? They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, providing mortgage money so people can get into home ownership. That's not what they're doing. They're playing a shell game with people like me. If I hadn't gotten my house financing through a credit union, people like me who don't have a goddamn clue how this stuff works. They tell us anything. Here, sign on the dotted line, boy. It's okay. We're going to take 3 points for the closing. What's a point? Never mind. Just sign here. What's my interest rate? Well, it's a it's a pretty good deal. It's a 5.8, and it's an adjusted. It's an ARM. We call it an ARM. It's going to adjust up in a few years, but don't worry about it. You have a blue note on the end. But don't here. Just sign here. Just sign here. What? What? What am I doing? You want to be a homeowner? Look at this granite countertops in the kitchen. Goddamn, sign it, boy! Oh, okay. All right. Now, that's not what happened to me. That's not what happened to the Malloys. I still have a mortgage, and my mortgage rate is 4.9. And I went to a credit union, and we put about 14% down. And we bought a house that was in crappy condition. And we fixed it up. Oh, but did we get the offers? Did we get the offers? Here, buy this one. Are you out of your mind? I can't afford that. Oh, plus the 4.9 is a fixed rate. It's not a teaser rate. It's not an adjustable. But I don't deal in the financing of my home with predatory highwaymen, robbers, thugs, cheats, liars, people that want to cut my throat and have drinks while I bleed to death. I deal with a credit union. And you know what? By definition, I'm one of the owners in the credit union. I have shares in the credit union. Do we make any money? We don't make any money on that, do we? Oh, we do? What do we make a year, Kathy? $10, $15? Well, it's not enough to buy a two or three people a good dinner here at a restaurant in Atlanta, but that's not the point. So how does it feel? I just wonder, does anybody out there realize, and this is, you know what this is? This is goddamn banditry. Don't anybody talk to me about conservatives or liberals or this is banditry. This is thievery. This is taking a gun and holding it to our heads and saying, give me everything you have. But you can't take it with you.
You can't take it with you, so you might pile it up high. It's so much easier for a camel.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
At the state of the world that we live in, when no one gives a damn about the future of children.
21 past the hour. Just a little bit more from this Nation editorial. You know, I don't know what the circulation of the Nation is, but it should be read by everybody in the country. The good that some of these mortgage giants were supposed to perform means nothing. The people that we have running the financial institutions in this country now, they look at the American taxpayer as a huge ATM. They don't give a goddamn about us, and they don't care about there's no such thing as a free market or the invisible hand or Adam Smith or any of that garbage. None of that exists anymore. It's all manipulation. It is all figuring out how to invent instruments. Financial instruments that somehow, if they are manipulated in just the right way, just move a little millimeter this way, now move it back this way, now move it back, all of a sudden the money starts to fall out of it. Only the money doesn't come out of a money cloud. It doesn't come from the great spook in the sky. You know where it ultimately comes from? Of course you do. It comes from the so-called third world. It comes from the working citizens of the second and first worlds, if those terms are still operable. It comes from the taxpayers. It comes from people who get up and trudge their way to a goddamn job that pays them $14 an hour, while the super rich can continue to just cut and gouge and slice and dice and laugh their asses off. Because, you know why? Because, well, we're so big we can't fail, because if we fail, the whole house of cards will come down. Give us the money. Give us the money. You bastards.
The Nation says if other nations join China in selling off their Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac portfolios, the credit crunch will become a deadly stranglehold. This is the reality of our debtor nation's dependence on supposed rivals who are propping up America by lending to us. If they decide to stop, Uncle Sam is screwed. Now, who's Uncle Sam?
Me!
And you. Instead of rescuing these financial losers, our wink, wink, nudge, nudge, government ought to be devoting its resources to jump-starting the real economy. Not this derivative crap. Not these debt exchanges. Not these little tiny cracks and little eddies and backwashes where you know, a few nickels and dimes drop through. But when you multiply the nickels and dimes by a billion or 10 billion or a trillion, Jesus God, all of a sudden you're talking real money. And who's going to guarantee it? Well, you and me again. Why not? But the government ought to concentrate on bolstering enterprise, employment, and productive investment.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Malloy, that sounds like something right after World War II. Get with the program. What was that again?
Enterprise, employment, and productive investment. And may I add, public works project. Do you realize, of course you do, the terrible shape the infrastructure in this country is actually in? Do you realize the billions upon hundreds of billions of dollars that could be earned, made, exchanged, passed through the economy by just getting to work repairing all of the, deferred maintenance? So, as the Nation says, Washington has got it backward. The financial system will not get well and return to normal lending until the economy regains its natural vigor.
Bankers' fright is going to deepen as more firms fail. Given the depth of this crisis, only the government has the ability to provide the needed stimulus by spending money on real economic activity. Programs that create new jobs and incomes, production and profit. Do you suppose that's going to happen, Truth Seeker? Do you think that can happen? Do you think that can happen before it all crashes down? Does anybody realize where we're at right now? You know, I hate to use the same worn-out metaphor that I use over and over and over again, but there is an anticipatory breath-holding going on in this country right now that is not dissimilar to what I experience with my Jack Black drinking buddies when they're sitting in the back of my pickup truck at the DeKalb County, Cobb County, whatever it is, public dump, where we're sitting there with our Winchester 22 rifles, getting drunk as sons of bitches, waiting for the rats to come out so we can shoot them dead and therefore perform a public service. But it's that anticipatory breath holding, waiting for the rats. And that's exactly what I feel now. How about you?
We got to rebuild America. Keep hope alive. What could I do? Remember the unity starts with you.
Hold on. Hold on.
Hold on. Is democracy dead? Only time's gonna tell. Get your feet in the street and start raising some hell.
Hold on.
And your day screaming. With Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 26 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Chick is calling from Corona, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Chick. Hello, Chick.
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing, sir?
I'm all right.
Mike?
Yes.
Good. I'm just calling to say, man, how, you know, I'm just so excited about this election, man. It is an historical election. And I was just hoping that America could just get past some of their hang-ups and ill will towards a person, a certain group, who really didn't have anything to do with calling themselves here or even calling their own ticket in life. If you work hard and you do all that you should in life to make yourself successful, such as Barack Obama has, because that is who I'm supporting, working hard, working his way up through a single family, a mother that did her very best to raise him, and he turned out to be a fine person, and his record speaks for it. And so I'm just hoping that we will just pick this candidate because clearly he is the best candidate on the ticket, bar none. And then he had enough sense to grab somebody on his ticket that would actually buffet where his strengths are, and be able to make the ticket so balanced to where we can really get something done in this dire position that we're in as Americans. And
well,
so I'm just hoping.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, Chick. I hope Barack Obama does have the ability to turn this monstrous sinking ship around. It was not sinking. In one sense, in the sense it is now, when it was handed to George Bush, Bill Clinton was Bill Clinton, but the ship wasn't sinking, at least not visibly sinking. There was poison in the bottom of the ship, as long as we're going to use this this metaphor. Let's just ride the hell out of it. But the ship was not sinking, and now it is. And I hope Barack Obama can... First of all, I hope he can get elected, given the two choices of Cheney, or I'm sorry, McCain. It might as well be Cheney, McCain and Obama. I hope Obama wins. I hope that the racism that is mother's milk in this country and has been for 300 years since before this country was this country, I hope that can be overcome. I do. I hope it could be overcome. Dan is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Dan.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mike, a long-time listener, and just wanted to throw it out there. I advocated for you years back when you didn't have a radio show. I sent some emails, and I'm just
thank you.
I have a lot of respect for your passion for this country. I wanted to bounce a couple of things off you tonight, and one was I think that there's a hidden agenda that most people can't see, and I believe that this ideological shift that this country has taken over the past two decades or so is an effort to eliminate many of the social safety net that FDR set up. I mean, I don't think that the conservative movement could do a front on assault in Congress to get this disrupted, but I think they backdoored these social programs by, mm-hmm. you know, things like illegal wars, bailing out corporate,
corporations,
and you know, I've worked in a car wash since I was 13. I'm 55.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a lot invested here. This is basically, you know, part of my retirement,
uh-huh.
Social Security. And I think that they're trying to eliminate it and many of those programs in a real subtle way. And
yeah.
I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Okay. All right, Dan, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. As a matter of fact, I got an email today from Turkmen that pretty much states what you just said, Dan. Here it is. Hello, Mike. George Bush is just doing what the rich want him to do. The Republican Party has wanted this meltdown since the glory days of their messiah, Ronald Reagan. This meltdown on Wall Street is a part of the Reagan Revolution and his secret war in America and our government. Remember what he said, government is the problem. As with Bush today, Reagan deliberately created massive deficits to force the Democrats in Congress to cut every social program possible, bankrupt the country, and then force everyone to accept what they want our government to be. Their true mission was and is to take everything possible from the American people and give it to the rich. Then the rich would allow some to trickle down to us. This is the history of the Republican Party's dream for America. Bush is simply playing the end game for the super rich and the corporations. If they can destroy this country and they are still in power, then they can reconstruct America as they see fit. To fix America, they must destroy it, and while still in power, reconstruct America as they want it to be. During the coming depression, is McCain going to do what FDR did, or what the super-rich corporations want him to do? Well, and thanks to the email, that presupposes that the McCain is going to be president, which he just may well be. But anyway, Dan's comments and the emailer there. I don't know if these are unintended consequences or if it was deliberate. I fail to see an overt connection between the people who have been talking about Starve the Beast, like Reagan, who I would assume. And no discussion here. Don't send me emails. I would assume Reagan believed himself to be a real conservative, a Goldwater conservative. I don't think their goal was to destroy the country. Maybe it is. You know, again, I'm not the brightest guy on the radio dial by any means. The predatory capitalists, though, their goal is certainly not to destroy the system that is feeding them. Their goal is to wound it. So it continues to live. It continues to lay eggs, but it can't do anything. It can't fight back. It can't resist. The combination of this insane predatory capitalism, and the people whose wealth now exceeds anything that any of us could ever imagine. We can't. The wealth that is being generated on the collapse of everything. What did Naomi Klein call it? Disaster capitalism. Only notch it up about five notches beyond the excellent book and point of view that she has put out there. This goes beyond that. This is how to feed on not on a corpse, but on a wounded creature that is still struggling, still trying to fly or swim or crawl or move. I don't think this is the Reagan Goldwater idea. Maybe I'm wrong, but this is like a virus. In order to survive, it mutates to the point where it doesn't completely kill the host. It just makes the host real sick until the host can infect and spread the virus. Then the virus doesn't give a goddamn. I don't think the predatory capitalists want to kill us. Not yet. Because we're an ATM machine. I don't think they want to utterly and absolutely destroy the social safety net, even though they talk about it. Because if they do, how are we going to go to work? How are we going to take care of our old people and our sick people and our mentally deranged people and our returning veterans and our unemployed people? How are we going to do it? So the predators are willing to allow certain systems and institutions to continue to function as long as they can continue to draw money out of it. So what do we do in return? I know what I do. I sit here on this radio program and talk about it. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. To the extent that I just talk and don't do anything, there is an element of shame that I deal with because I may not be the brightest man on radio, but I'm damn sure not the stupidest. And I know what's going on. And I can't think of a way out. Can you? All right, we have a break coming here, and I'll try to, if you're on hold, stick around. I'll try to squeeze in a couple more calls when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Smile, goddammit. Don't sit there with your long face. Smile. It is 10 before the hour, thanks to the crew, our technical crew, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, and Ben Birch. Our non-technical crew, that first group works for money, the second group works for free. Sharon Cordy, Bob Alexander, and Bridget Wolf. And the executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay. Don't forget to consider becoming a Nova M founding member. Lots of goodies when you do that. Go to NovaMradio.com, check it out. Check it out. And again, tonight we had a rather long segment here on the the efforts by Bob Alexander to do something with Vince Bugliosi's book. And there's a website established, and I'd like you to go and check it out. Do what you want when you get there. It's self-explanatory, but check it out. ProsecuteGeorgeBush.com. ProsecuteGeorgeBush.com. Remember, if any one of 2,700 county district attorneys in this country has within his jurisdiction a family who suffered a dead son or daughter in Iraq, that prosecutor can charge George W. Bush with murder. And again, this is kind of an experiment on the one hand to see what we are willing to do or not willing to do, to see what prosecutors are willing to do or not willing to do, to see what the courts are willing or not willing to do, and to see what perhaps the Supreme Court is willing or not willing to do. We're in dire straits. It takes creative ideas, if that's not redundant, to try to come up with something. My idea is to try to elect a government that will immediately begin a massive public works project, not unlike the WPA that was before my time, but that I've heard about, and I still see results of what the WPA, the Works Project Administration, was all about during the Depression, when hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions, were put to work for decent pay, and they cleaned up the country. They really did. The infrastructure in this country right now is on the verge of collapse. It's a multi-hundred-billion-dollars job, maybe a trillion or two. And rather than using these massive amounts of money to bail out these predatory bastards, these capitalist pigs who have done this to us, who have done this to us, and where's the money going to go? You tell me, Truth Seeker, where do you think the $100 billion to Fannie Mae and the $100 billion to Freddie Mac and the almost $100 billion to AIG, where do you think it's going to go? Is it going to go into the hardcore production? Is it going to go into construction or farming or roads and bridges or dams or school construction or paving city streets or redoing city sewer systems? Is that where it's going to go? No. It's going to wind up in some creepy, massively wealthy son of a bitch who sits there and laughs. Over and over again, it doesn't matter what the financial crisis is that they generate. They come to the ATM, the hapless American taxpayer, and they collect over and over again. Bob Alexander has an idea based on Vince Bugliosi's book, Prosecute This Son of a Bitch for Murder, Lock Him Up Forever. I have an idea, try to elect a government that's going to face what we've got to deal with here. Which idea do you think is more workable and a better idea? That's right, his. But it's stunning. When I woke up, or no, we had the story for you last night. $85 billion decided last night to go to AIG that you and I are backing. Wouldn't we have rather put that money into infrastructure or schools or public health or programs for people who are desperately in need of assistance right now? Wouldn't we? I would have, and I know you would have. So again, I'll ask the question. I'm sorry, I'm repeating myself, but when was the vote taken? Where were you? Where was I? When were we asked our consideration for what is rapidly approaching $500 billion in bailouts just this week? When did we vote on that? When did we say, yeah, okay, go ahead? Oh, and don't forget another $200-300 billion for the slaughter in Iraq. Don't forget that. That money has got to go to the predatory sons of bitches, most of whom are controlled by Dick Cheney. It's got to go for their fraud and their cheating and their stealing. Hundreds of billions into that sump hole. Yeah, we'll keep doing it. Sure, what the hell? And you know what? This is This may be the fault of both political parties, but the Republicans have been riding herd on this mess for the past 8 years. They're the ones who have really ridden this horse until it's exhausted, its sides are heaving, it's drenched in sweat, and they're going to put him up wet. They're not going to hot walk him. They're not going to take it down slow. They're just going to say, "Give me another one, goddammit!" And you know who the other one is? Sure, John McCain. John McCain and the lipstick pig woman. My God. And you know that there are millions of people in this country who are going to vote for that? They really are. They're going to vote for it. We've been rode hard and put up wet, and there's somebody else who's ready to ride us again. And they're going to keep doing it. And they're going to keep doing it. Until you and I say no. It's that simple. Don't give me any ideological garbage. I don't care if you're left, right, conservative, liberal, independent, libertarian. I don't give a goddamn what you are. Just remember what somebody a lot smarter than me said. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And, you know, I have to deal with that every night. Every night when I finish this program and think about how, you know, what did you accomplish tonight? Not much. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.